Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Simon Phipps joins me. We're going to be talking about Jaspersoft, business intelligence software that takes all your data and does something useful with it. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Simon Phipps. Episode 227, recorded September 19th, 2012. Jaspersoft. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open source software. I'm your host, Randall Schwartz. Merlin at StoneAge.com. I'm talking funny because it's being recorded. This show is being recorded on Talk Like a Pirate Day, and that's about all you're going to get out of me because that's about all I can deal with it. So, joining me this week again, one of my favorite co-hosts. Well, they're all my favorite co-hosts. I keep saying that to everybody. Simon Phipps, welcome back to the show.
Yes. I'm you know, taking it seriously. I actually hate the word pirate when associated with people who are infringing copyright, because pirates are murderous thugs who destroy people's livelihoods. But just for the sake of Talk Like a Pirate Day, I'm willing to dress up and point out to people that if the software is free, you can use it without any restrictions of use. And it's impossible to steal open source software because it's free for everyone to use.
Indeed, indeed. And there was our piracy comment for the day, since it's Talk Like a Pirate Day. We have a great show. Okay, that's enough. No more during the show. That's it. We're done. Sorry, I just slipped there. We have a great show today. We have Matt Geise, who is going to represent Jaspersoft. He's the Senior Director of Community Development at Jaspersoft. Jaspersoft is one more of those enterprise-y, buzzwordy kind of things for business intelligence. Which means it's sort of like, I think we did ERP and Sugar CRM and a couple of other shows recently that sort of covered the same area. So we'll probably repeat some of the questions to Matt about how this differs from the shows we've had already. But it's basically taking the data in your organization and doing something useful with it. So it's not sitting in an Excel spreadsheet or something, or you can't get at it. Oh, did I say Excel? I meant Open Office math computer thing, whatever it's called.
LibreOffice. Come on.
LibreOffice. Sorry. Simon, I should have known you'd come up with that one. have you looked at this at all, Simon? What else can we say about this?
Well, curiously, I have spent a little bit of time looking at business intelligence software because I did recently help Spago BI with some issues that they've got. They're now an MPLV2 licensed, fully open source business integration package. So I discovered this is a field that is rich and replete in buzzwords that you don't understand the first time you hear them. Basically, this is just a way of making sure that you can have cool graphs in your reports and on your website that let you analyze big data. So I'm going to be interested to hear how they do that. And I'm going to be particularly interested to hear how they're honoring their open source roots in this project.
Very good, very good. Well, I don't really have much else to add to this. Let's go ahead and bring on Matt. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. It's great to be here.
And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm in San Francisco at our headquarters, just about three blocks from AT&T Park, where the Giants play.
Well, I know a lot of our audience is probably familiar with Jasper Reports and Jaspersoft, and I sort of gave an overview at the beginning of the show, but I probably did a pretty bad job of it. So why don't you go sort of give us the 30,000-foot view about what Jaspersoft is about?
Sure. So Jaspersoft provides a flexible and cost-effective alternative BI suite to proprietary vendors like Cognos, MicroStrategy, Business Objects, those types of guys. We provide basically a full end-to-end BI suite that enables pixel-perfect generation of reports, dashboards, analytic views on basically any data. Our suite includes, our Jasper Reports library, which is a Java library that can be embedded into Java applications. Our Jasper Reports server, which is basically a web platform for reporting and analytics that a lot of our customers will take and embed into their products or use in a standalone setting.
Okay, so you used the term BI a couple of times, and let's try to de-jargon it just a little bit. What is BI? I think it's business intelligence, but describe what that means.
Yeah, it is business intelligence. I get that question a lot, actually. It's a basically it's reporting analytics. So if you think of charts, graphs, tabular reports, slicing and dicing, doing OLAP type of investigation of data, drill through into the data and kind of understanding and doing the analysis of your data, that's what we provide. We provide that capability and putting that in the end, in the hands of the end user and the business user, so that they can come to conclusions in real time and make good decisions based off of real data.
Now, in terms of data, you're talking about customer-facing data, customer-related data, or is this internal process data for, say, inventory and maybe HR and stuff, or is it everything like that?
It could be anything. It could be people using it to look at web logs, that type of thing. It could be customer data. It could be marketing data. Could be information on, you know, research data. We have lots of customers who are even in the education industry, so they're looking at scores, you know, student scores and that kind of thing, and being able to kind of go through and research how things are going, how programs are working, and looking at, you know, how they're spending their money and what the value is that they're getting back from it.
And is this just in terms of viewing, or is this also data processing and maybe providing RSS feeds and maybe summary tables in some higher level database and stuff?
We have an ETL tool. We have Jaspersoft ETL, which is actually an ETL tool created by Talend, which allows you to process data and transform it and load it into different locations. So if you're setting up a data warehouse or a alternative data store apart from your transactional data store, you can use Jasper ETL or Jaspersoft ETL to do that. We basically, the BI platform sits on top of the data store and provides reporting and analytics on top of that, and basically allows you to drill into the data itself after it's been cleansed and migrated into the location that you want it to be put into.
Okay, you got me again. ETL, what's that?
ETL, extract, transform, and load. So it basically is a tool that allows you to move data from one data source to another, or it could be you have CSV files or something like that that you want to load into a database, or you want to move data out of a transactional data store into a data warehouse. So it allows you to do that migration. So that's the extract and load. And then the transform piece is, you know, if you wanted to actually do some transformation of that data. So, for example, if you were storing names and didn't have the first name, last name as two separate fields, or you did have them as two separate fields and you wanted to change it to the alternative, the transformation capabilities allow you to do that. There's also data cleansing and that type of thing that can be done during that transformation process.
And the only acronym I'm not going to ask you to explain is CSV.
You knew that.
Yeah, I know that one, right? But you know how every time you're going to come up with an acronym, I'm going to have to ask you. Because this is, unlike a programming show where it's my area and I can already drill into it, what you're saying is like, I love these enterprise-y shows because it's all about these buzzwords that I hardly ever get any time. So on behalf of my audience, I'm asking for all these terms to be defined.
Nope. Keep being honest.
Great. So what's the history of this? Where did Jaspersoft start, and how did it get here?
So Jaspersoft, back in 2001, Teodor Dansu was looking to put reporting into an application that he was developing. In the process of doing that, he was looking at different tools that were available, including Crystal Reports and some of the other proprietary tools that were out there. What he basically ran into was that each tool was either too expensive or too complex to embed into the product that he was creating. And so he went off and decided that he needed to create his own reporting engine. And that's when Jasper Reports itself was born. He put it out onto SourceForge, got picked up by the community and enhanced, became a widely accepted open source tool out there. Then in 2002, Giulio Toffoli, he was trying to create reports and felt that there was a need for a graphical report designer, and that's when he took on trying to create a graphical report designer, which ended up being iReport. And from there, later, Jaspersoft at that time was called Panscopic. We partnered up with Theodore and Giulio and basically helped to promote and move the open source product forward. We renamed the company to Jaspersoft at that time and started building a server platform based off of Jasper Reports.
Okay, and so a component of it started as open source. What was the choice to do that? What was the motivation at that point?
To start with?
Yeah. Open,
I mean, basically it was Theodore trying to create what he needed. And, you know, him having created something that he felt was useful and feeling that other people could benefit from it, he felt that it was right to go out and share it with a broader audience and get contributions to it and help to build it into something that was even better than what he had created to start with.
Now, over the time, though, as Jaspersoft grew, parts of it then became closed source stuff. Can you describe where the delineation is and why there's a line?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously we have a business to run as Jaspersoft. You know, one of our main goals is to really drive the features and benefits of the open source tool set. In order to do that, though, you know, we have to finance it and kind of push it forward. We have more than 60 engineers on staff here that are actually building capabilities into that tool set for the benefit of our community and for our customers. In terms of going from the community aspect to the commercial aspect, we basically providing the platform as the open source community piece. So the Jasper Reports library is basically our open source core. It's a LGPL license, so it can be embedded into applications and used freely in applications. We have a lot of our community members that are embedding it into different tools and that kind of thing that they're creating. And basically, they're not paying us a dime for it. We also have a server platform that is kind of the base platform for storing and distributing reports, so allowing end users to come in, access the reports, schedule reports, send them out to other folks. That becomes basically a web-centric reporting hub for folks, and that too is an open source component. When we go to the commercial side, is where we start adding in additional enterprise features, auditing, multi-tenancy on the server platform, additional charting capabilities, ad hoc reporting. We have a domain data abstraction layer that we provide in the community or in the commercial versions. And so basically it's building more pieces onto it and kind of creating more value into it that enterprises need.
Right. So could you talk to me a little bit about what your open source philosophy is then at Jaspersoft? You know, are you about making sure your customers have got software freedom? Do you view the open source project as market development for your commercial product? Is this about co-development by community peers? What's your open source philosophy at Jaspersoft?
I would say that our open source philosophy is that we provide a set of features to our community, a set of software packages to our community that provide them the value and allow them to take it and extend it into whatever they want. As part of that, what we look for in exchange is, you know, obviously we want to leverage our community to help our customers and help the proliferation of our software so that, yeah, eventually we do want to get commercial customers out of it. But the reality is that it's, you know, to have an open source, to look at your community as a feeding ground for going in and getting commercial customers, it doesn't really work that way. It's more of a small percentage of an open source community that are interested in really going to kind of a commercial level. And so it's less about getting the dollars and cents from them and more about leveraging the collaboration that happens within the open source community and the feedback that we get, the collaboration that they have with one another, that basically adds to our marketing capabilities, adds to our support capabilities, those types of things that you really just, you can't put a number on those from a dollar perspective.
Right. So I've been looking around on the website at how you describe yourselves. I noticed that on the homepage, you don't really mention open source. I do notice, however, that on JasperForge, you describe yourselves as the leader in open source business intelligence. So do you think that it's reasonable to describe yourself to your commercial customers in that way? Or have you been pulling back from that and focusing more on your commercial side and treating the open source kind of as the attic recently, would you say?
You know, we've over the past couple of years, we have had a kind of a drop off in our focus on the community aspect and the open source aspect of things. The Jasper reports and iReport products definitely are hardcore into the open source area. Theodore and Julio are big proponents of the open source model, and so they're very active out in our community in doing that. We're in the process of actually doing some pretty exciting things around our community that will help engage and really kind of reopen our focus on the open source model and kind of drive things down that way to where we're less focused. I wouldn't say less focused on the community, on the commercial stuff, but more focused on the community stuff, on the open source piece. And you know, if you've done much on our Forge recently, you'll see that there's definitely, you know, it's kind of an old model Forge. It provides SVN capabilities and that kind of thing. It's really not. We're going to do some things that actually open things up more to allow developers who are using GitHub and Google Code and those kinds of areas to actually contribute more. And you know, the thought is that we would move some of our we're considering the move of our code out into, you know, more places like GitHub.
Right. So, I mean, I'm also looking at your supported platforms page here, and I noticed that on that page, that's at jaspersoft.com/supported-platforms. I noticed that quite a lot of the platforms there you don't support in your Jaspersoft community projects. So you're saying that you don't support Debian there, you don't support FreeBSD, you don't support CentOS, you don't support Fedora. So what's the rationale behind that? Those appear to only be supported in your commercial products.
There's kind of a semantic thing to what we say for support. So if you actually click on, there's a link at the top that has the data sheet in it, which goes into more detail, but you'll see that there are, you know, quite a few of those things are, not certified, but basically they should work. So we take this model where we take our commercial platform, we run it through a rigorous QA process, certify it on multiple platforms and that kind of thing. And really the main reason why certain platforms aren't supported, especially when you're talking about different flavors of Linux and Unix, which really our product isn't that closely tied to the operating system, the core reason for saying that it's not supported there is that we don't take the community editions through the rigorous QA process that we do with our commercial editions for those particular platforms.
Right. So is that related to the Java virtual machine that you're using there? You say that Jaspersoft should work in any Java 1.5 or 1.6 environment. Does that include IST and OpenJDK in addition to the proprietary Java versions that Oracle supplies?
We tend to stick with the standard, Sun or now Oracle JVMs. For the most part, we find that most of the different Java platforms do work fine. There are some things where we have to do special things for example, IBM has their own JVM, and sometimes we have, for our commercial side, because we do support WebSphere, we have to do some things to actually make it so that our product works well with their JVM. But that's not necessarily the case with a lot of the open source or kind of open standards type JDKs that are out there, or JVMs that are out there.
So now you listened into the show about Sugar CRM the other week, and
right.
The question that I had there for John was about the ability of community members to start with their community edition and then move to their commercial editions, or to start with their commercial editions and then move over to the community edition. So I'm looking now at your jaspersoft.com/editions page. Uh-huh. Is it feasible to use your community edition and then cut over to the commercial edition, or use the commercial edition and cut over to the community edition, or are those two separate universes?
It's feasible to do the cutover. Obviously, it's easier to go from the community edition to the commercial edition, just for the sheer fact that when you get into the commercial edition, there's features and things that you're using, that if you happen to be using those features and you cut back to the community edition, you may have reports and that type of thing that stop working. So, for example, if you're using our semantic layer, the semantic layer isn't available in the community edition. So if you downgrade into the community edition or convert over to the community edition, the reports and the views that you create based off of that semantic layer obviously would start having some issues. But we definitely, our goal is to make it so that people can freely move between the different editions. Obviously as a commercial company, and this is something that you would probably point out anyway, is that we definitely have a incentive to allow people to move from our community edition to our commercial platform, just from a monetary standpoint. But from a community standpoint and all the benefits that we get from just having developers that are out there using Jasper Reports, leveraging our technology, and what that could turn into for us later, having people using Jasper Reports or using our community edition of our server is far and away better than not having them using it at all.
So as I'm listening to this, of course, I'm trying to figure out, I'm going to talk about the community edition, of course, because this is what the show's about. So I'm downloading this thing, and it's a big bunch of Java stuff. What do I need around it to make it work? Is this run as a standalone Java thing, or is it something that plugs into Apache like Tomcat, or what?
So you can download, there's it basically runs in a web container, so you can run it in Tomcat and you need a database that for the repository where the reports are stored and users and user profiles and that type of thing. The installers that we provide include Tomcat, they include Postgres, so as kind of the default repository and the default application server. If you have a different application server or a different database that you want to use for your repository, then you can download and install to those particular to that particular environment. it's we're not tied into your data source per se. So, you know, we don't require any particular data source. So if you want to, if you're running reports off of an Oracle database or running it off of a MySQL database, it doesn't matter to us. You're basically you're creating a JDBC connection to that database, and we manage it the same way as we would any other database.
What sort of data sources do you actually allow? You might as well list them all since you gave a couple of them already.
We do all the relational databases, data stores. So if it has a connection, a JDBC 2.0 SQL 92 compliant connection, then we can connect to that. We also have connectors to various big data stores, so Hadoop Hive, Hadoop HBase, MongoDB, Cassandra, some of those. You can do file-based data stores, so if you want to connect directly to an XML file or to a CSV file, then you can do that. There's lots of custom people. We have people in our community who create custom connectors. So if you're doing, you know, connecting to something through web services or something like that, so long as you're meeting up to the APIs that we have for the data, you mm-hmm. can create a connector to basically any data store that meets that, comes up to that API, and then we can take the data from through that API and process it into a report through Jasper Reports.
And so my interaction with it is I'm speaking to a web interface, and I'm identifying data sources there, and then identifying the rules or reduction algorithms from there. Or do I have to write in a programming language somewhere?
It depends on what tool you're using. If you're using Jasper Reports, the library, you end up having to build a lot of that yourself.
Okay.
Because it's basically using the data connections that you build within your application. If you're using the server platform, you want to connect into, say, for example, just a relational data store, you would set up you can either go into the web UI, create a data source, you know, specify that it's a JDBC data source, and you're off and running, and you can, if you're, you know, you can basically go in and connect a report up to that data store, that data source, so that the queries that are canned in your report run through that data source against your database, return the data back and render it into your report. If you're using the commercial side of things, the commercial server, and using the semantic layer that we have, you'd set up your data stores, then go in and create what we call a domain. And when you go in to create the domain, it shows you, you know, the various tables that you have in your database, allows you to pick and select fields out of those tables, set the joins between the tables and that kind of thing, so that your end users can go through and leverage the different fields that you've put together and the relationships that you've established to create their reports.
Cool. I see you have a conference coming up, I guess, a couple of weeks from now. Is that the first of many, or has that been an ongoing thing?
It's our second Jasper World conference. It starts, it starts on Monday. Monday is mostly a free training for a bunch of the registrants that we have coming in. Tuesday and Wednesday will be the core of the conference, where we'll showcase what's coming out in our 5.0 release. We'll talk a little bit about what we're doing with our community edition, what we're doing with our community platforms, that type of thing, and you know, it's going to be a good time. We had it about a year and a half ago the first time. We had a lot of really great feedback. A lot of people came in that really just wanted to understand JasperSoft and how to use it. And you know, we have a lot of our engineers and architects that lead a lot of the discussions. So it doesn't just become a big marketing show. It's more of a, you know, engineering led how to, you know, really get into the details of the technology.
And at this conference, do you get a lot of participation from people on the community edition?
We do. In fact, I think last year it was probably maybe 30 or 40% of the folks that showed up were using the community edition. We'd sit down and talk to folks. We have a expert bar that's set up, so I'd have people coming up to me asking me questions, and you'd realize that, you know, you'd ask them what version they're using, and they tell you they're using the community edition. We have folks that do presentations that showcase what they're doing with our community edition, as well as customers and partners who are showcasing what they're doing with our commercial editions.
And in this community edition, what's the percentage of commits that come from a community as opposed to coming from Jaspersoft employees?
The way that we take contributions is, right now it's a little bit archaic. We don't have we're not out on GitHub and those kinds of platforms that really allow you to take pull requests and that kind of thing really well. Yeah. It's one thing that we're looking to augment and make better. I would say the percentage is probably maybe 10-15%. Most of it is bug fixes and that kind of thing that are submitted to us, reviewed by our engineers and our architects to understand whether it's, you know, whether it works with the architecture, and then it's committed into the code. We do get some contributions that on the product that are beyond bug fixes. So, for example, we have one of the contributions that I especially like is that we received a contribution around virtualizing the reports out to disk or managing the way that it's virtualized. And that's a contribution that we got from our community. It's a contribution that really helped us scale the Jasper reports to the next level, beyond, you know, where you would go if you were just running everything purely on memory.
Can you tell me a little bit about the governance that you're using for the community? Do you have a contributor agreement? Do you have any sort of community member equity in the governance? How's it all working for you?
We do have a contributor license agreement that we have in place. So if folks want to submit code to us, we do ask them to sign a contributor license agreement, primarily so that we can ensure that it's compliant with our GPL licensing, and that it doesn't cause any issues for our customers down the road. As far as the equity in the community, one of the things that we're definitely working on is how do we create the benefits that our community are looking for within our community, so that they feel that they have a say in the process and that kind of thing. We do have trackers on our website, so our community definitely has a say in the process. In fact, even if you don't have a community, your community has a say in your process, just with the social networking that happens today.
Right. Oh, that inevitably. So yep. I've been looking at on JasperForge. The projects that caught my eye actually were Jaspersoft Studio and iReport. Looks to me like you started out on NetBeans and then have been encouraged by the universe to head over onto Eclipse. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your motivations for using NetBeans and Eclipse?
Yeah, I mean, NetBeans, they're two different platforms. They're two different developer communities. We've always wanted to do more things with the Eclipse Foundation and Eclipse users out there. And it turned out that, you know, when Oracle bought Sun, and NetBeans became less of a strategic platform, then we really wanted to go forward and kind of look more fully at the Eclipse platform. So the you know there's a lot of value. I mean, we have developers here in-house that use Eclipse. We have a lot of our community members who use Eclipse, and providing a plugin to Eclipse is just a natural way of you know, helping those community members be able to leverage our product within the environment that they're used to working in.
Right, right. So I was looking at iReport Designer. It looks a very full-featured piece of software for designing reports. Lots of interesting capabilities that extend the environment around NetBeans. It's up there on screen at the moment, in fact. I'm very interested in that capability. Can I use that without using any other JasperSoft software? You know, can I just use that to connect it to maybe a MariaDB database containing information that I've gathered from my website? Or is that purely an adjunct to your the rest of your JasperSoft universe?
No, you can definitely use it standalone. It has the Jasper Reports library inside of it as the core reporting engine. It allows you to connect up to various data sources, and as part of the standard process of developing reports, it provides you the ability to execute the reports and export them out into different formats, PDF or HTML or, you know, Excel. So we have a lot of our community members who simply just take iReport or take JasperSoft Studio, they'll develop reports in there. They'll run them within that tool, export them out into the format that they want, and send it around via email to the folks that are interested in the reports. It's once they outgrow that they start looking at the server platform. Is that, you know, when you get to the point where you want people to be able to go and run their own reports instead of calling you every day, you set up the reporting platform and you publish the report out there, connect it up to the data source, and then folks can go and run it themselves instead of having to call the developer. And then they get into when they get to the point where they've got so many people calling and saying, hey, can you know, you create this report, can you create that report, that's where they start looking into moving beyond the community server and into the commercial server and start trying to create a self-service reporting platform or analytical platform so that folks can go in and not only view the reports and interact with the reports, but they can create their own reports.
Right. So if I wanted to add on to my website some sort of a report that was analyzing my web server logs to show where users are coming from, is that the sort of thing that I would design using Jasper Reports or with iReport?
Yes. Yeah, you can. How you put it into your website would be up to you. Depending on how you want to do that would define kind of which platform you want to use. But you know, if your website is a Java based website, you can use Jasper Reports, add it into your web application, and create your basically what iReport does is it allows you to create what we call a JRXML. The JRXML file is a XML description of the report layout, the expressions that are used to calculate different fields, the query that's run against the database, and the parameters that feed into that report. So once you've created that, you can basically put it into your web application with Jasper Reports, hook it up, and allow people to run it from there. If you just want to basically put it as a static thing into your website, you can export it into HTML and just, you know, add it in as another page, but that's not not what most of our community members or customers are doing. And then when you want to get into creating much more interactivity with the report, that's where people look at our server platform and start using the web service APIs, the REST APIs that we have within the server platform, or they they do single sign-on with the server platform and modify the UI to look and feel so that it looks very similar to the application that they're integrating it with. And then they basically have a report, have the full reporting and analytical capabilities added into their application through that
right, framework. Right. Any command line tools, would I be able to write a simple report and auto build the HTML page just using a command line tool, or is this all designed for GUI pages and then Java running on an application server?
Well, with the REST APIs, you could probably, you know, create up some tools that you could run a report from on the server and render it back. But the people who are doing command line executions of reports typically are using Jasper Reports, and we have some sample code that's out there that shows people exactly how to connect up to a Jasper Reports process and basically run a report from there. But Jasper Reports is just a Java library, so it needs to be in a container somewhere. Right. It can't just run on its own.
Right. So with all of these projects that are being used by community members, you must be getting code contributions back into the project. So how does that process work? You were talking about using GitHub, or about wanting to in the future use GitHub. How at the moment, if somebody finds a bug or wants to add a feature, how does that work?
For the most part, they do it through our bug tracker that's on our community site right now. If they log a bug and they find a solution to it, a lot of times they'll just put a patch into the tracker and submit it back to us. As far as a larger contribution, that's people who have larger contributions typically will reach out directly to us, talk to us about what it is that they're creating, work with our architects and our engineers to understand how it would best tie into the technology stack. And eventually we would take that in basically through direct communication with those folks. So right now it's a little bit, old stone tools type of way of getting contributions. We're looking to kind of get out the power saw and all the power tools and allow folks to really get in there and start doing things.
So you don't have any concept of an external committer onto your repository then? This is all purely, all the committers are employees of Jaspersoft, and the community is purely a client community that can sometimes somehow force things into your commit group inside the company.
Yeah, unfortunately that's the state that we're in right now. For the most part, our repositories are read only. We can give access to particular people, but for the most part, they're not open to the general community for committing.
Right. So at the beginning of the show, you were hinting that you did want to move in the direction of using GitHub and tools like that. Does that mean that you don't want to be in that state? That you want to be in a state where you actually have a genuine co-developer community? Or is Jaspersoft happy with having this a community basically of users and all of the committers working for the company?
No, we want to have contributors. We want to have users as well. But there's a lot of value in allowing the community to get their hands on the code and contribute to it. We provide the code out. It's just that we don't provide a great way of allowing the community members to contribute patches or enhancements to that code right now. And that's one of the things that we need to work on and that I actually am planning on pushing forward probably in the next 6 to 12 months to really start making something that our community can really get involved in.
Right, right. So how would you say your community at the moment and your community ambitions compare with something like Spago BI, which is describes itself as a completely open source business intelligence suite? What's the comparison like?
I don't know that much about Spago BI, but I would say that our model is one where, you know, we do kind of follow the open core model, where we develop the core and allow folks to create extensions around the outside of the core. There's ups and downs to doing it either way. One thing that I would say is that, you know, you could claim that it would be more stable by just having JasperSoft own the core and building and allow the community to create extensions. But, you know, you guys know that's not true either, is that that's, you know, having a community out there working with your code actually improves the stability and the velocity at which you're able to augment and improve the quality of your code. So, you know, I don't know what the right answer is there. All I know is that we're definitely trying to push down towards the path of having more community interaction and more contributions from our community members to our code.
So we have a couple of questions from the chat room while this conversation has been going on, which is useful. We have a live chat room, and we'll talk about that at the end of the show. RF, whoever you RF is, it says, is anyone using it in conjunction with GIS, like ArcInfo?
Yeah, we have some folks that are using our tools for data that's around that. They're pulling they'll pull in geographic information and be able to kind of talk about where, you know, basically be able to map different where their customers are or something like that. I don't know any specific examples, but I know that we do have community members that are doing things like that.
Cool. And same person, RF, also asks, how does iReport Designer compare to something like the Report Generator in Access?
Report Generator in Access. I've never used the Report Generator in Access, but if you look at iReport, if you're familiar with like a Crystal Reports Report Designer, iReport is pretty much very similar to that, where you get in, you can, it's a banded report style. You set the headers, the footers, the detailed bands, summary bands. You can create expressions that, you know, to print when type of expressions that show you, that allow you to, you know, print certain fields based off of certain criteria and that kind of thing. It's a very powerful tool for creating reports. I've yet to see anybody really run into something really critical that they weren't able to do in creating a report using iReport.
So we're almost out of time. Is there any question that I didn't get to that you want to make sure our audience is aware of?
Not that I can think of. I think you pretty much covered it.
Oh, good. Well, it's not my first show, so that sounds like a good thing then. I'm curious about your background. We didn't actually talk about you much. How did you get into being in the community manager here? What's your history, and particularly what's your history with open source?
So my history with open source is more as a user of open source. I'm not somebody who's been out, you know, developing a lot of code for different open source projects or you know, that kind of thing. What my history is really been in working for companies, implementing systems, using open source tools to implement systems, and you know, I've worked in the financial services industry. I've worked in small companies, large companies, worked for government agencies and that type of thing, where we get in there and really, you know, we would go in and create systems for them. And, you know, using open source is a fast and effective way to really kind of take pieces of a system that you're trying to put together and quickly put them together without having to build it yourself. And, you know, as you do that, you basically if you make modifications to that code to add additional features that maybe didn't exist when you started, but you need for your application, then that's the perfect opportunity to contribute that back into the open source community and allow others to benefit from that as well. My history here at Jaspersoft, I've been here for 5.5 years. I originally was running a software as a service platform where we had used our community server to provide reporting and analytics against Salesforce.com data. Mm-hmm. We since got out of that business because we wanted to focus on creating the tool set for customers and community members who were creating their own service rather than managing our own service. And I moved into running our global support organization. So my background is much more focused on the enablement piece, the getting people to where they really are able to be successful with our platform, and then, you know, pushing our engineering team to do the things that we need to do on the open source side to really help push the platform forward for our community.
And I didn't quite catch that, but it sounds like you're less of a coder and more of a manager type, right?
Well, now I am, but my background, I've done expert system programming. I've done Java programming. Mostly, I'm a Java developer from the past. It's been probably 4 or 5 years since I've really done a whole lot of coding. But I stay pretty close to the technology and close to the developer groups that we work with. So that we can make sure that they have the tools that they need to go forward.
So probably not much of a command line guy. So if I asked you your favorite scripting language, I might not get a straight answer, right?
Well, my scripting language would probably be Perl. And
yay!
that's not just because I know that you're to me, a scripting language is based off of, you know, the right one is which one is dependent on what you're planning on doing with it. Most, in my experience, most of the scripting that I've done has been around file processing and that type of thing, in which case, you know, Perl pretty much has it hands down from an IO perspective.
Well, thanks. You're probably the first guy in like 7 shows that said Perl, so I really appreciate that. And when you're editing Perl code, what text editor do you use?
I'm a VI guy.
Well, 1 out of 2 isn't bad. Okay. Well, sorry.
And it makes me feel good when it doesn't beep at me.
That's true. I guess we're running out of time. So I just wanted to thank you for coming on the show and describing Jaspersoft and your role there and the role of the community edition of Jaspersoft. And I wish you luck in everything you're doing.
Great. Thanks, guys.
All right, that was Matt Geise. I forgot how to pronounce this at the beginning of the show. Representing Jaspersoft, he's the senior director of community development there. Simon, what'd you think?
I'd say that it was another open core product, and you know how I feel about those. I would much rather that the end user and the commercial deployer got the opportunity to experience and leverage software freedom in their organization. You know, having said that, you know, they've got a lot of good code in there. I think that the reporting tool looks very promising, and I think that if I was going to be creating reports for my website or for my business, I would probably look at their Jasper Reports tool as the way to generate it. So I think there's some good code in there, and I just regret the fact that they're not fully embracing software freedom and helping people avoid the need for piracy.
Yes,
arr.
Yes, exactly. So what I liked about it is that we at least see that a company doesn't have to be completely proprietary and still make money. I mean, it's a small win to have at least some of it be open source, and I like that part about it, and I like that there is a community about it, even though boy, it sure sounds difficult to submit a patch, and I hope Matt moves towards getting that to be much simpler to do. Like, especially if they move their code repository out into an open space, that's going to be a big step for them if they get that complete in the next 6 months or so. Because one of the things that you don't get if all you get is tarballs every 6 months is you don't get a sense of the direction that the code is heading, so that you can also maybe say, oh, I can fix the problem they're having with this here. It's hard to build a community unless there's really an open source. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I think that without the source code there, you're dependent on somebody else to determine the destiny of your project. So, you know, within an enterprise, I want to make sure that I've got control of my IT budget and the information technology in my business. And when I see proprietary code, I know I'm handing the keys to my future over to someone else. So the big benefit of open source is that I've got the ability to go fix the things that I need. And that's why I mentioned Spago BI. Is Spago actually is a fully open source business integration package. It is possible to do business integration and then to run a services business around it. Jaspersoft's taken a different path. And, you know, I'm delighted for them. I'm delighted about the fact that there is some open source there. And I wish them every success as they head more in the direction of software freedom by embracing a Git repository, allowing community members to make direct commits, and doing the other things that actually make you open source.
Very good. Yes. I second that, though. Definitely. I think there's a lot of room there for growth. And I think that there'll be even more room later. So, speaking of upcoming guests, that's my awkward transition for the day. We have an ever shortening list of upcoming guests, because I keep saying I'm going to send out a bunch of mail this weekend, and then this weekend goes entirely by, and then I haven't sent out my mail. So we have four guests currently on the upcoming list, and a bunch more that are still waiting for me to send them some mail. But next week should be a really great show. KVM, virtualization software that everybody, well, a lot of people are using it to become virtual, become cloudy, become, you know, in the web sort of space there. So we got some guys from Red Hat coming in to talk about that. We have HPCC Systems, which is high performance computing, people that do teraflops and petaflops and all those big flops things. We have the chatbot, ERR. You know, they should have had that on Talk Like a Pirate Day. The chatbot. Right? Which is a Jabber-based chatbot that can be programmed to do some really cool things automatically. And then just added to the list last week, Pootle. What a great name for a project. POOTLE, Pootle. It's an online translation management tool with translation interface. So it's a way to allow open source projects to collaboratively provide translations by actually sort of putting all the hard work behind web pages. So you basically just go to the web and help do the translation that way. So that should be pretty cool too. Again, a lot of email flying around. Sorry, I don't have any more people to announce just yet, but we will. Next week, I'm sure we'll have at least two or three more guests. I just got some email in Walt. The show was going on, in fact. So I'm sure I've got some stuff to do this weekend to pull some more people in. You can go to twit.tv/floss. There is a link from there to our big spreadsheet that shows the upcoming guests, including the ones I should be sending email to. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google+. You can also follow us at Floss Weekly, all one word, on Twitter and Identica for upcoming announcements of guests and other things that are appropriate. You can follow me. We have a chat room. Sorry, I skipped over that bullet. We do have a chat room at live.twit.tv. We tape at 8:30 a.m. 8 a.m. What did I say p.m. for? Because I was thinking Pacific time. The next letter of P, it was a P. So 8:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays, unless we're interrupted by things like last week when we had the iPhone announcement. You can also follow me. I'm at Merlyn, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter and Identica. I am Randall L. Schwartz on Google+. I have about 16,000 followers now, thank you, on Google+. Please join in on the conversations there. I'm in New Orleans for a planning retreat, according to the IRS, from September 28th to October 5th. So if you're in the New Orleans area, keep watching for my tweets to plug those in there. That's enough plugging for me. It's all the things I want to talk about. So, Simon, what do you want to plug today?
I'd love to say that I'm going to have a planning retreat on the inland revenue in the UK, but I would need an income for that. Coming up soon for me, I'm speaking at a pair of events next week in Brussels for Open Forum Europe. Would love to see anyone on Monday or Tuesday at the Open Forum Europe summits. And then in a couple of weeks' time, I will be at Open World Forum in Paris. Open World Forum is one of Europe's largest business-oriented open source events, and it's happening on the 10th, 11th, 12th, and 13th. Actually, the 11th, 12th, and 13th of October, and it's completely free of charge, no admission charges whatsoever. Week after that, I'll be in Berlin at the Document Foundation's LibreOffice conference. Would love to see you there. At the end of October, I will be in Malaysia at the Malaysian government's open source conference. And that's just been confirmed yesterday. So you're the first to hear that here. If you would like me to come and speak to your open source or Linux user group or to come and present to your company, I will be in the US in the middle of November, and I'm looking forward to seeing a number of people there. But do get in touch with me through my website, which is at webmink.com, if you'd like me to come visit your company or your user group and give a talk about OSI, the Open Source Initiative, and the future of open source. Everything that you want to find out about me, well, actually, you can probably find out in a few seconds because you won't be terribly interested. But if you do get fascinated for some reason, it's all there on webmink.com. You'll find me as Webmink on Twitter and on Identica, and you'll find me hanging out on Google Plus as well. That's enough plugging for one day. Back to you, Randall.
Thank you, Simon. And Simon, I always appreciate it when you come on the show with your laser precision at getting in on what the problems are with OpenCore.
I just hope that your guests feel the same way and that I do stand the chance of future employment as well.
Yes, it is a little bit important because your insight, your ability to really see the whole picture on open source is legendary. I appreciate the input. I learn something new every time I have you on the show, even. I learn a different aspect of why this is important.
Well, thank you very much. Well, I'm trying to encapsulate that all into the articles that I do for InfoWorld every Friday. And I would love people to go embrace my InfoWorld articles on a Friday, vote them up, and make sure InfoWorld think that they are wonderful for me.
Very good. Very good, Simon. And thank you once again for being on the show. And I hear that music coming up, which means the same thing does every week. It means we'll see you again next time on Floss Weekly.